The Gemara says
the concept of shamash presumably would exist even before the Gemara had the sugya, because there's a need to have something to light from one candle to another, or from to light the candle itself. We need something to use to light the candle. And assuming that we're separated from the Malika Miner Lener sugya, and that's a whole separate point, the question of lighting each candle, so that has to be done by something, so that would be the shamish. So when the Gemara says that you need a ner nosaf kedei l'shamish la'ora, so then that provoked the whole question of, does that mean essentially a, let's say, ninth candle on the eighth night of Hanukkah? So the language of the Ramah is that nowadays we just leave the shamish there. So that seems to suggest that there's two different concepts, theoretically, that the shamash being the candle that you use to light the other candles with, and the takana of a ner nosaf, which didn't have to be the identical thing as the shamash, even if nowadays that's our practice to use that candle to light it and to have it be the shamash. So we saw a whole discussion, is the shamash a function, now merging the terms, the shamash ner nosaf, is it a function of the iser hishtamshus la'ora, which raises a couple of questions. You only need it if you want to be mishtamish la'ora. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara, although the Gra, very pointedly, the Gra takes out those words of the Girsa. And so the fact that it sounds like from the Gra that there's just a takana that you have to have a ner nosaf. So the various questions a post can talk about. So for example, if there's other light in the room, or if you're lighting outside, the context of the Gemara makes it sound like it could be. It's not the only way to read it, but it would flow well from the Gemara, is that only after they move the candles inside and you could have it on your table, then it became necessary to have a shamash, to have a shamash. So the shamash either so that you could use the ora, or a shamash as a heker because it's on your table. So there were some who understood it that way. And so we discussed all of those machlokas, and if it's only in that context, if there's other light in the house, etc., etc. And also the questions of, is there any type of kedusha, so to speak, to the shamash, even though it's a little bit funny, it seems to be the opposite. The whole point is that this should be the ner shulchol, essentially, a ner that you can use. But is there any type of mitzvah significance to the shamash, and to what extent does it follow the same rules? And we also discussed the possibility that it may actually have a greater chumrah to it, which sounds funny, but that our original sugya, which keeps coming up, of kafsa zakakwa and kafsa lo zakakwa, that even though we paskin that if the lights go out, you don't need to relight them, but we saw two paradoxical points. One is that that might only apply to a single candle or all the candles, but if we're looking at the mahadrim and the mahadrim, where you're having per night candles, and some of them go out, so maybe we'll say you have to relight those, because it's one thing to have no candles at all, but to have three candles on the fifth night of Hanukkah is a useless message, and therefore maybe you do have to relight them. And consistent with that, you may have a similar concept by the shamash, that there's no, if maybe you don't have to light the candles again if they go out, but if the shamash goes out, maybe that has its own independent rule, that if the whole need is to have a shamash as long as you have the candles there, kedei l'shamash la'ora, so then you should need to relight the shamash. And then the question of if it follows the same rules of candles, such as if you follow the Maharal's Kepeda, not to have wax candles, so should that apply to the shamash also? Very possibly not. A few discussions along those lines. Yes, sir.
What about a Hartzell's Mouse from across the room type of activity? Because we have the shamash and the Chachila, we would allow it?
Yeah, that also gets into machlokasin. So then you're saying, first of all, the whole assumption that the Gemara is talking there without a shamash, let's say. Right. So then with a shamash, so then it's still problematic, because the idea seems to be more of a b'dievet kind of thing, that the it's still a shayla in the poskim if you're allowed to l'chachivah kind of use it to the, which it also gets into the question, is this basically really an actual usage, or is it more of a tliya, more that whatever usage takes place, we'll blame it on the shamash now. And then the question is, could you use also, if you would need more light than the shamash provides, it also gets into a discussion.
We still say there's a chiyuv, sort of, to have it.
Well, halacha l'maisa, we seem to assume there's a chiyuv, even though, lamdas-wise, one could argue, two points, one could argue that there's a couple of angles to consider that maybe you wouldn't need one, such as the presence of electric light, the question if one doesn't want to use it, there are some points to argue. Halacha l'maisa, the minhag clearly seems to be to assume that it is a chiyuv. It's an interesting question if it's impossible. So if it's impossible, we'd probably assume that you're still yotzei without it.
With a bracha?
With a bracha, yeah.
Really,
it's hard to make a case that you shouldn't make a bracha just because of the shamash. Even if you say you really have to, I don't think anyone made the case that your initial halakha is puzzled because of it, because of a lack of a shamash. That would be a hard case to make. I didn't see that anywhere. Did anyone say that? Yeah, I don't think anyone would say without a bracha. So, you know, for example, we had a discussion recently about Friday night, and if you have only one candle, so then the candle should be for Shabbos, but then as Magen Avraham points out, if you have two candles, so one candle should be for Hanukkah and one candle should be for Shabbos. Again, no one ever says, but what about the Shabbos? And even though that seems to be a priority too, but not enough of a priority to say get rid of the Hanukkah candles because of it. Okay, David, do you have a question? Okay. Okay, so I think those are some of the major points about Shabbos, and if I'm leaving out anything. Those are some of the highlights, no pun intended. It's actually a pretty good one though. There's a different sense of higher light. What other topics would you like me to focus on?
Zareya.
Okay, Zareya, fine. So I'll start talking about Zareya. So Zareya is a complex malacha. The truth is, you know, hopefully we'll have a little bit of time to chazer Zareya. I mean, it's not going to help you for the Bechina, but hopefully we'll, in the context of the first Parak Sugyas, God willing, next year, the way we announced it for next semester, next calendar year and next semester, the way we put it officially on the chart for next semester is the Malacha starting with Hotzah and Bishul. So what I mean about Hotzah is try to talk about the Malacha of Hotzah in general, but also try to get some of the major Sugyas that come up in the first Parak that we wouldn't want to miss. Not, you know, over a long period of time. But so one of them is the topic of somebody who bakes in an oven and takes it out in the middle, which is on Daf Dalet. It's a major sugya we should get a look at. So that very much impacts the Malacha of Zareya. So we've talked about that a lot in the past, and we'll probably have a chance to go over that a little bit then also. But just to kind of review some of the highlights of Zareya, again, in a very constricted format. So Zareya is a malacha which seems to mean encouraging growth or creating plant growth. And there is a fundamental question which connects to what I was just referring to in terms of how could the malacha of Zareya exist in its most fundamental sense. That we assume in its most fundamental sense that it means to plant a seed in the ground. And the question is, how is that conceptually possible on Shabbos? Because presumably, it's only called planting if the seed is in a way that it's going to take root. And it does take root. And if you're going to put a seed on the table here, that's not called planting. It's not going to do anything on this table. It's only called planting because it takes root. But root taking doesn't happen on Shabbos. The root taking takes some time. It's machlokes in the Gemara how long it takes. But let's say, for example, if it takes 3 days, so then that doesn't happen in the context of that day. So how could we say that you have the malacha of Zareya as a malacha? And there are two basic sides of this issue, which is well known as the machlokas between the Minchas Chinuch and the Rashash. As we mentioned, they're not really the first to talk about it, and certainly not the last to talk about it, but that you can find this machlokas echoed in earlier sources. Some consider it to be a machlokas amoraim if you look hard enough. But it's most associated with the Minchas Chinuch and the Rashash. And the two basic models are, and they have important nafkaminas lahalacha, that the Rashash basically believes that your planting is considered to be a malacha al tnai, that you do the action of the malacha by putting it in the ground on the condition that it ultimately takes root, even though that happens later. While the Minchas Chinuch understands it differently, the Minchas Chinuch understands that the malacha is defined based on what you do in your human role. So your human role is to put it in the ground. And what happens later is not part of your malacha. So therefore, the malacha is to put it in the ground where it's going to take root. Now, just to illustrate how they come out differently, what prompted the question for many is the comparison to Bishul, because the Gemara, as we'll see next semester, the Gemara seems to make it clear that you can interrupt Bishul or Afia baking in the middle, and you won't be chayiv. So why can't we say the same by Zriya, that you can interrupt the Zriya before the plant takes root, and you won't be chayiv? And therefore, since that never happens on Shabbos, if you need it to happen to be chayiv, you won't be chayiv. So according to the Rashash, they're both the same. That you're always chayiv for your initial action, al tanai. If it takes place later, then you're chayiv for the malacha. If it doesn't, then you're not. And it's true about both. They have the same structure, that both, when you put seeds in the ground, you're only chayiv if it takes root later. And when you put bread in the oven, you're chayiv if it bakes later. But according to Menachas Chinuch, it's different. That baking has its own definition, and planting has its own definition. Planting is putting it in the ground. And baking is when it's when it finishes its process of being prepared. And why is there a difference? You could explain, we mentioned probably 6 or 7 different approaches to the difference. You don't have to really know all the approaches, but they take various paths. One could simply say it's a Lashon Le'adam difference, that the language is different. That people relate to planting as putting something in the ground, and they relate to baking as being the whole process while it's in the oven. So if you have bread in the oven, and I ask you, did you bake the bread already? You'll answer, I'm baking it now, it's in the oven. Well, if you have seeds in the ground, and I say, do you plant the seeds? You'll say, yeah, I planted the seeds. So perhaps it's just a Lashon Le'adam difference, or a lot of other ways to look at it, but in any event, the Menachas Chinuch feels they're different, and the Rashash feels they are the same. So those have halachic, two major halachic nafkaminas. Because according to the Rashash, if you take the seeds out of the ground, you will not be chayiv, just like if you take the bread out of the oven. And according to Menachas Chinuch, it's not true. According to Menachas Chinuch, you were chayiv already for putting it in the ground. Doesn't matter what happens afterwards. It's one major practical difference. Another practical difference is, according to the Rashash, since baking is comparable to planting, so it's a chumrah in baking, that just like in planting, you plant on Shabbos, it takes food after your chayiv, so too, when it comes to baking, if you put food in the oven, put bread in the oven 1 minute before Shabbos is over, and it bakes after Shabbos, you're also chayiv. But according to Menachas Chinuch, you would not be chayiv that way for baking, because baking is different than planting. It's true for planting, because all your malacha is just putting it in the ground, but when it comes to baking, the whole thing has to happen on Shabbos. You have to both put it in and have it be finished on Shabbos. So this also has a practical ramification. If somebody plants on Shabbos, so should we say that he should come back and uproot it? So, mice, it would seem like it wouldn't hurt to uproot it. The only question is, can you do that on Shabbos? So it's a machlokas whether it'll help or not. So if you believe it'll help, can you do it on Shabbos? So probably, it seems the only issue that seems to be raised is one of muksa, in which case it depends, are they edible seeds which are not muksa or inedible seeds which are muksa. But it seems unlikely, we mentioned one exception, which Shlomo Zalman considers the alternative in one place, but most seem to assume that it's not considered to be an act of kotzer to take it out of the ground, that they're not direct opposites, that we shouldn't assume that anything that is zareya, the opposite is kotzer. That does not seem to be true. Hi.
Two questions. So first of all, so we don't necessarily assume 100% for the Menachas Chinuch, let's say the matir baking 3 minutes before Shabbos ends.
Well, he wouldn't be matir. Nobody would be matir. The question is, whether you're chayiv for it.
They wouldn't be matir because we're choshed a little bit for the.
Yeah, there's an extensive literature which goes out of Yom Hazeh about who's right. And that some of the Talmidim Yavnei Nezer we mentioned were in a big machlokas about this. There were some who supported the position of the Rashash, the Chavkas Yoav, and the Kli Chemda, and a few others all get involved in this discussion. The Yavnei Nezer himself, the Egle Tal, we mentioned, was in the mill. The Egle Tal said that basically agrees with the Menachas Chinuch that you're chayiv from putting it in, unless you never had in mind to leave it there. If you put it there with intent to take it out, then he'd agree that you're potter from taking it out. And the Menachas Chinuch himself considered that and said it's not true, because that's like saying just because you have to be a sosra al menas livnos for it to be a malacha, You know, so you wouldn't say that it's not a malacha if you only do the stira. But that's objectively a malacha by itself, so it's a question whether that's comparable or not.
It's like lighting with intent to extinguish.
Right.
The other question was that, did we mention also according to the Rambam, since he formulates it as the pu'ula, so he sounds more like the minchaskina? So
there are those who say like that. There are, you know, there are those who attempted to make those machlokas in parallel to each other. So there's a lot to say about Zareya. The question is, should I say everything or move on to other malachas? Any specific questions more about Zareya? We talked about many, many other issues. We talked about the issue of opening windows by if you have a plant. So in general, there is a question, first of all, whether you can be over Zareya Daraisa by a potted plant that doesn't have holes, called Atzit She'eino Nakov. So you have a plot that has earth in it, a pot that has earth in it that doesn't have holes connected to the ground. So it's a machlokas whether it's possible to be in violation of Zareya in that context. It sounds like from the Gemara that the Gemara is not exactly clear. There's some who felt that it was considered to be a not Derech Zareya. And there are others who disagree. So that's a shaila in itself. So the question is, if you assume that you have a problem with Zareya in a potted plant, so let's say you have a potted plant in your house, so now you want to open the window to let in more light. So there are basically three dais in the poskim, which correspond to three dais in Rishonim in a different issue, which maybe we'll get to at more length next semester, that there were those who were makel, even if you explicitly want the plant to grow, as long as you have a dual purpose, you want the plant to grow and you want light in the room. There are those who are machmir, even if you only want light, because of the psik ratio that the plant will grow. And then there's the middle ground, which many poskim like, the shiltei gibarim, that if your intent is for light for yourself, and it's also going to have the effect of the plant growing, then that's mutter. But this also, together with the fact that it may be nesed rabbanan to begin with, because it's a potted plant, although this question could be nogea to, let's say, a greenhouse where you have plants that actually are connected to the ground. But most of us who discuss the shayla in terms of our household, so it's in terms of very possibly an issa d'rabbanan. We also discussed the whole question in general about whether it's really comparable, let's say, to watering. We know that watering plants is considered to be a malacha, either a malacha of Zareya or a malacha of Choresh. That's a little bit unclear from the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Moed Katan. But let's say we assume it to be Zareya to water the plants. So the question is, what about other types of benefit? And if you just accelerate the process. So the Gemara says that if you have a atzitz nakuf, if you have a pot that has holes, that is connected to the ground, and you adjust it, you move it a little bit further from the ground or a little bit closer to the ground. So the Gemara says if it's further, it's going to be an act of kotzer, and if it's closer, it's going to be an act of zareya, because there's going to be more or less qualitative nourishment. So the Rishonim, for the most part, the Rambam might be an exception, but the Rishonim, for the most part, assume that that's a derabbanan. That Min HaTorah, it's not really considered to be zareya or kotzer, that it's just an issue midrabbanan. There's a proof for that the Rishonim will talk about. So that might be relevant here as well. Maybe that's really the comparison, that this is not really to create growth where it wouldn't be there, or to make it possible where it would otherwise die, but it is to accelerate the process. And that if it's just a matter of accelerating, maybe that's not necessarily significant. And that's another distinction that we have when it comes to Bishul. The Egle Tal talks about that when it comes to Bishul, so stirring the pot is considered to be a malacha of Bishul. If you're going to do something that's going to accelerate the process of Bishul, that is a malacha. And here apparently accelerating the process of Zriya seems like it's not. So he discusses why that is, and he suggests that when it comes to Bishul, again, as we saw before, we're focused on the end product. So bringing that about quicker is going to be a malacha. While when it comes to Zariah, apparently we're less interested in the end product, just in the act of it being planted. And therefore, accelerating its growth may not necessarily be a malacha d'oraisa. But in general, we have to figure out how all this works. With the Yerushalmi has a statement which may be relevant, that kol shehu lahavchil asapri, I think the language of the Yerushalmi, which should stand to mean anything which is going to expand or improve the produce is going to be considered included in this melacha. Okay, so there's more to say about it. Should we talk? Well, what else do we talk about that melacha specifically? Talked about knas a little bit. But, aside from the question of whether or not it'll cancel the melacha, but there was a takana that whatever you planted on Shabbat should be uprooted as a knas. They discussed a little bit why that's different from other melachos. Got the whole discussion about that.
Discussion about planting on water, hydroponics.
Right, so the question whether that's a derais or not. The Rambam says that if you throw seeds into a pot of water and leave it there for a few hours, so you're chayiv. So it was a machlokis why you're chayiv for that. Some understand that it's because you make it possible for it to grow better when it's then put into soil, so it's an active hechsher. In which case, that gives you one chiddush, that anything that you do that prepares something for malacha is also considered to be malacha. And others understand that the idea is that you can grow in water, that's also considered to be growing. So that's the chiddush. So then the question is, what are the nafkaminas for hydroponics? We mentioned Rav Vosner has a tshuva where he says, it would seem on the surface hydroponics might not be kederach, although the question is how to factor this Rambam in, and the question is how do you read the Rambam, what's his chiddush. Rav Vosner points out in the tshuva that hydroponics is really different than this, because contemporary hydroponics involves not just water, but involves all kinds of nutrients in the water, which may come closer to being a kederach type of planting nowadays, more than would have been in the past of simply putting something into the water. Of course, as we approach Shemitah year now, so then hydroponics has a lot of relevance in that field as well. It's a controversial question. Okay.
Hydroponics
is basically a science of growing produce in water. And so the question is, if you do that, is that considered to be a malacha of Zareya? So that's where it's relevant here. But it's also highly, highly relevant. You know, it's probably a little bit less relevant in the practical sense then, because most people, you know, could just avoid doing that on Shabbos, probably. So it's probably not so negay, but it's incredibly relevant to contemporary Israel, because the Shemitah year is coming up. So it's also a discussion whether or not planting in hydroponics is considered to be a violation of growing produce during the Shemitah year, and coming up after Rosh Hashanah. Right.
Is there a consensus in one way or the other? The
I don't think so. Yeah, I think it's a pretty hot topic.
Do it right offshore as well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Where? Right. I don't think they do it in that kind of weather.
No,
but
still.
Right. Okay, so I have to figure out about that. Maybe
just curious, where do people in Israel get their produce?
Yeah, that's a way out of the range of this hard topic. Happy to talk about that, but probably not today. Sorry? Yes. Yes, no, it definitely can. There's a lot to say about it. There's also a lot to overlap with Shabbos. You know, the concept of malachas is shared by Shabbos and Shemitah. You know, conceptually, practically, there's a lot of overlap, but probably not for today.
So there was one more of a Rivia topic that he brought in, Zaria, that I think the Gemara talks about. If you have a plant over with air in between and over the ground, it's a chinapa over the ground. Apparently, the Gemara says that it gets some nutrients from the ground below it.
Yeah, that's what the Gemara was referring to. The Gemara says that if you lift basically the Gemara says that if you have a plant on the ground, you put it on pegs, right? So then, even though there's air in between, but it still gets nourishment. So then the question
is, the peg is still like air, still
right.
Okay.
How does it get nourished?
Because it's close enough that it still draws from that.
The roots, like, sort of go down.
But if the roots are touching, right, I guess it could still be touching, but not as comprehensively, so it's not going to get the same degree of nourishment. I have to ask a botanist to get all the exact details. Okay. So, should we continue on that? Should we move to another malacha? All right, so Choresh. Choresh is either the second or first malacha, depending on how you count. Our Mishnah has it first. Our Mishnah has Zareah first. The Rambam has Choresh first. And that's really a question in the Gemara. The Gemara says that Choresh should have been first. That presumably the way you do things is that you first plow and then you plant. So the Gemara has an answer for that question, but it's a whole discussion what should really be the first malacha, and gets into a whole discussion also about how do you define Choresh. So Choresh, it seems, if you look carefully at the Rishonim, they probably, you start off with two positions, but you probably get three or four, depending on how you look at it. That it seems that Choresh could either be considered a preparation for Zriya, or an act in of itself. That something that you're doing to improve the land might be considered to be a malacha of Choresh, even if it's not corrected to Zriya. So, for example, I think the Chiddush Haran writes that straight out, that even if you're not preparing for planting, improving the land is considered to be an act of Choresh. However, even within the position that it is about preparing for the land, so that it seems to be that there are two different ways to formulate it, both of which are based on Gemaras, that either you could say that it's based on Rifuye Ara, like Rashi has that language in many, many places, that it's about softening the ground. Or you could say that it's not necessarily about that, but anything that prepares the ground for planting, even if it's breaking up the ground, even if it's doing other things, moving away rocks, whatever it is, that may all be considered in the malacha of Choresh. So we had different conceptions, we talked about that a little bit. We talked about the fact that there is a concept the Gemara invokes a lot in the context of Choresh. It's not really clear whether it's the Gzeir Drabbanan or a definition of a concern of Choresh, but there is this concept of Ashvuye Gumos, that we're concerned that if you flatten out the ground, that either is Choresh or will lead to Choresh. So there are various scenarios where the Gemara prohibits something because of Ashvuye Gumos, and that comes up a lot with Halacha L'maisa, and we talked about that a little bit in the context of shoveling snow and the like, and various gezeiras that are relevant. And we talked about the difference of a household and a sada, that the Gemara says that there are certain actions. You do the same action in a sada, it's considered to be choresh. You do it in the house, it's considered to be bonin. And the question is, so should we assume that choresh essentially is about fixing the field, in which case we could understand it does kind of directly parallel bona. Bona is about houses and choresh is about fields, but it's essentially the same thing. Or if we say that choresh is about preparing for planting, then it's not really the same thing when it comes to Shabbos. It's just kind of a coincidence, so to speak, that they have similar actions, but they're not really the same kind of malacha. And we talked about the fact that, nonetheless, non-arable land is not subject to choresh. If you're going to plow in a place where people are not going to plant, or it's not possible to plant, so then that's not going to be choresh. And that got us into a discussion that was relevant to a lot of malachas, that one would come to the conclusion, correctly, that if one plants in a desert, if one plows in a desert, one would not be in violation of Harisha. So then the question is, well, we know some people who did Harisha in the desert, and they apparently gave us the model for Malacha and Shabbos, that during the Mishkan was taking place in the desert, and that's the model for Malachas of Shabbos, so how could we say that's not Choresh? So we saw basically two different approaches how to address this question, which comes up in the context of other Malachas as well, and the whole notion of learning the Malachas from the Mishkan. One approach is to say that it was miraculous. They're both about miracles, but different ways. One approach is to say that it was miraculous, that somehow we made the desert bloom, so therefore, if you were to be Choresh in that desert, it would be a Malacha, but in our normal deserts, it's not, because nothing's going to happen. And the other approach was to say that the truth is they didn't have to do all these malachas at all, that everything happened miraculously, but the nature of learning a malacha from a mishkan, from the mishkan, is to say that whatever theoretically should have to be done in order to provide for the mishkan is the model for malachas in general. Yes, sir.
We spoke about also the general idea of you doing your malacha, but over here there's a major derech to do it with an animal.
Correct, right, yeah, that's also a major issue. So the Rambam and the Ramban have different nuances on this point, that the Rambam talks about doing Choresh with an animal, and he says it's a violation of an Isser based on a Pasuk. And the Ramban says more than that. He says, yes, it's an Isser Deraisa, but it's the same Malacha. It's the Malacha itself of Choresh, that when you do the Malacha with an animal, so that's considered to be the Derech of how people are plowing their fields. And therefore, it's not mitigated at all by the presence of the animal. And that's the definition of the malacha. So this machlokas also has even more relevance nowadays when there are certain malachas like plowing, which are done in conjunction with machines. So do you say the machine makes a difference or not? As we mentioned, the question of electricity on Shabbos is, if you're going to give a shiur on electricity on Shabbos, it could mean two opposite things. It could mean that you have an act which is normally mutter, but maybe it should be usher because there's electricity involved. So does the usage of malacha, the usage of electricity constitute a malacha that thereby prohibits certain actions? Or alternatively, it could mean the opposite. It could mean that you have an action which is a malacha, which would otherwise be usher, but because you're doing it through electricity, maybe that therefore is not your direct maisa, and that should be mutter. So this whole topic, electricity on Shabbos, could mean two opposite things: making permitted things prohibited or making prohibited things permitted. So in this context, the machlokas seems to correspond. And Rav Tzipi Frank has a truth about this, and the Chazon Ish and others. You're plowing with, let's say, some kind of a electric plow or machine. So should we say that, okay, so it's only a derabbanan because you're not really doing it yourself? Or should we say, no, that this is the way people plow nowadays, so plowing with a machine is the malach of plowing, and it's not going to be mitigated at all by the fact that it is a machine. Okay, and there are many other topics, again, that just to kind of get the definition of that. Any other questions about that?
In terms of the Mishnah, you said that there were two things. There was
two. They're both based on miracles. Either we say that they were able to plow the desert because it did grow, even though nowadays it wouldn't. Or, no, they didn't do this malacha at all. That's not what it means to learn malachas from the Mishkan, because they were able to get their materials miraculously. But if we were to build a Mishkan, what malachas would we have to do in order to build a Mishkan? And then that we look at how the malachas are defined through that. Now, this point of non-arable lands, so we talk about Lamaisa, for example, that for kids to play in a sandbox, it's dry sand, so that's presumably mutter, because there's not going to be any choresh that's relevant to that sandbox, nor muksa if it's set aside for that purpose, if it's a sandbox. But that's important to note the difference, because if they're playing in a field, so they have to be careful, because even a little amount of digging into the ground is presumably, as Rav Osner points out in the Shuvah, that even a little bit is the malacha of choresh, because the shear is minimal. That itself is also a discussion, what exactly the shear of Harisha should be. It seems like it's kemat nothing, and that there's a whole machlokas about it, that most of the Sidur de Pas, so the shear is the grogers, the shear is a dried fig, but the question of how Zareya and Harish fit into that was a whole discussion, that both seem to be relevant to their results, that Zareya, you could plant a little bit and it grows into something big, and Choresh, a little bit of digging into the land, creates a lot of potential for growth. So if that's the case, the kids really have to be careful. If they dig into the ground even a little bit, that would seem to be a malacha of Choresh, or at least on some level, malacha of Choresh. And Choresh is also a case where there's a lot to talk about in terms of malacha shenitzricha legufa, that if somebody digs a hole in the ground and he's not looking to create the hole per se, but he's interested in the dirt, so then that seems to be an example of malacha shenitzricha legufa, except that the Gemara says that even Rabbi Yehuda, who does not acknowledge the exemption of malacha shenitzricha legufa, even Rabbi Yehuda would be makel on this because it messes up the ground, at least in the household. So he says it's makalkel. And then there was a surprising Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham said that if you want to take the dirt, then you have this discussion. But if you're not interested in the hole or the dirt, so then maybe you should be chayv. And then we discuss some explanations of why that would be. Okay, yes, sir.
What if you're running on a field and your foot, you know, it's raining, and you sort of like
Right. Writing on the field should not necessarily be an act of chavisha, although there are other things we have to worry about the psik reisha. So the Gemara has a famous machlokas. It's really the key sugya about psik reisha. And melach shenitzich legufa, psik reisha specifically, if somebody's dragging a chair over the over a field, and where it's likely or possible for it to cross a furrow. So then you have an issue, but walking is not considered to be in that category. There was a discussion in post-game about baby carriages and walking canes and high heels. And in most cases, mikvah and most of that depends on baby carriages especially, because as the Gemara discusses, it does kind of the opposite of chorish. It doesn't soften the ground, it compacts the ground beneath it. So that's not an act of chavisha. With walking canes and the high heels, it's a little bit different because it creates a hole that would seem to be an issue. And there are various degrees of heter towards that depending on how necessary it is based on the fact that it's completely unintentional and not productive and not derecha chavisha, etc. So with all of that, the most dramatical certainly on the walking canes, makom they have an area. The high heels are presumably also, even though you could argue about the tzorech. Yes?
That's what I was going to ask.
Right.
Also, a different question would be, you mentioned, sweeping indoors.
Yeah, so sweeping indoors, so that was one of the things that Chazal prohibited because of Shvuyei Gomos, that you shouldn't sweep inside. And the Rama says that even if you have a paved floor where it's not connected to any ground, so we make a gzeira because we're concerned that you might come to sweep unpaved floors. So nowadays, though, even though the Rama has that distinction, has that chumrah, but later Svarim point out, and the commentaries on the side point out, that nowadays, which is only really recent today, it wasn't so long ago this was not the case, but nowadays we're living in environments that are really completely paved and that our houses are completely paved, so maybe we don't have to worry that because we're sweeping on an inside floor, we'll come to sweep on the ground, because they're completely different and we don't have that type of chashash. So that's how many assume. Mishnah Berurah says that we're more makel on the more necessary things. So to sweep is necessary. To do other things which are also included in gzeirah, such as putting oil on the ground and things like that. So if it's less necessary, so we're not necessarily going to be makel on that.
But what I don't understand the
malach. So the question is, so there's a little bit of ambiguity in the Gemara. Yeah, let's assume that you have an unpaved floor.
So you just dirt.
Right, so a dirt floor. So if you're going to sweep on the dirt floor, so then you're going to flatten out the ground. Flattening out the ground, the Gemara seems to include within the melacha of chorish. Now the question is, all of these concepts that the Gemara lumps together are in various places under this Shvuyei Gomos, I don't think it's 100% clear whether it's saying you'll be doing the act of chorish by doing this, or that it's a gzeira because of chorish, which would impact how you understand, how you apply the halacha in various places. I'm not sure if it's 100% clear in each place what we mean when we say Shvuyei Gomos. It seems to sometimes mean you're touching upon a deraisa and sometimes refer to a siyag. Okay, anything else about that? Okay, so we also spoke about kotzer and ma'amer and dash and zora and borer. Yes, sir, W is your hand. Okay, so I'm going to randomly pick some of those, not necessarily go in order. I'm just going to highlight some of the interesting things. It's all interesting, but I'll just highlight some of the things that come to mind first. Zora is particularly fascinating, even though it sounds kind of unusual, but it has major halachic relevance. And it's really the topic of what comes down to being probably a machlokas between the Bavli and the Rishalmi. And Zora means literally winnowing. We don't really know what winnowing is in our environment, but it basically involves throwing the produce up into the air so that the lighter stuff that you don't want is going to blow away with the wind, and the heavier stuff that you do want will fall to the ground, and then you take that. So if that's the malacha on Shabbos, so what does that mean? So that was a whole discussion. The Yerushalmi says that if someone spits into the wind, so he's chayev mishum zora. And that caused a lot of discussion because we would have thought that zora is a borer kind of malacha. That's what the Gemara lumps three malachas together. Gemara says, Hazora, Vahaborer, Vahamarakin, are all chayiv mishum. They all seem to be aspects of borer. They're all different malachas that are about separating good from bad. And the Gemara has a discussion that if you're all about that, so why do we need three separate malachas? Why don't we just give it one slot? So the Gemara gives half an answer and basically says that since they were all in the Mishkan, so therefore they're all counted. They say half an answer because the Gemara basically said they're all identical. And then said, well, they're all in the Mishkan, so that's good. So that's enough to make it different malachas. So it's half an answer because you still have to explain some difference. It was the same identical act happening three times would be counted as three malachas. So apparently they're very similar actions which share a purpose, and you could have made a good case that they should only be one malacha, but because they were all present in the Mishkan, so then that small difference is enough. So what's the small difference? So you find different approaches of Rishonim, which may not be arguing with each other, they may just be focusing on different things in different places, but either it's about the material that's being used, or it's about the tool that's being used, or it's about the fact that in the Mishkan, in the process of Sidur Depas, you would have had to do all three of these processes. It's not that you could just pick one because they all do the same kind of thing, but each one would be necessary at its own stage, and therefore each one gets its own slot. So here, talking about Zohar, it seems like this is a part of Borer, that you're separating the good from the bad, and you're using the wind to do that. So the question is, how does the Rishonim's case of spinning have anything to do with that? You're not separating anything bad from good. So it sounds like from the Yerushalmi, and that's the way the Yerushalmi actually puts it, it says, Kol Shehu Mishum, Kol Shehu Michus L'Ruach, whatever is making use of the wind. If you need the wind, and you can't accomplish what you need to accomplish without it, so then that's the definition of Zohar. So that gets into a whole discussion. Is Zohar about separating bad from good, or is it about using the wind essentially for anything on Shabbos? And we saw that there are many other interpretations you're showing me as well, so it's possible not to have them as a machlokas, but many, primarily Rabbi Akiva Eiger and many others who followed him, thought that there was a machlokas here between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, that the Bavli thinks it's all about borer, and the Yerushalmi thinks it's about usage of the wind for all purposes. So therefore, the Rabbi Akiva Eiger talks about spilling water outside your window, and should you be afraid that the wind is going to come and blow the water away. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, among other things, that he thinks that even if it would be a problem for the Yerushalmi, which he's not sure, but the Bavli wouldn't, and he thinks it's a machlokas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, which has an impact for Hilchos Borer as well, because the Yerushalmi also seems to say that it's not Borer unless you separate all the bad from the good. If you leave some bad there, that it's not Borer, and we don't assume like that la halacha. We assume that even if you only take away some of the bad, but you leave some, it's still Borer. And that also has to do with this issue, because if Zohar is part of Borer, so Zohar, by definition, is not going to be 100% effective. You're not going to be able to use the wind to get all the bad stuff out. So if Zohar is included in the Borer Malachos, it's not 100% effective. So Borer doesn't have to be 100% effective. But if you believe that they're two separate Malachos, so then you could take the Rishonim's attitude of saying that even if it's not, that it's only going to be Borer if it's 100% effective. So the Rishonim has this line that you could have somebody who's burrowing all day and is not chayiv, and he could be burrower for a few minutes and he will be chayiv. He says, we have this big pile of stuff which has a lot of bad stuff mixed in it, so if he spends all day trying to pluck out all the bad stuff but he doesn't finish, so then he won't be chayiv. But then if he takes a small section of it and puts it in his hand, so now that's the whole amount, and he just takes out the bad from that, he'll be chayiv. So the Rishonim's picture is that there's one of, you have to take away everything bad, and the Bavli doesn't necessarily agree with that, and the Poskim don't agree with that. So that's relevant also to this machlokas. The Gemara in Bava Kamma is also highly relevant, that the Gemara says that if somebody starts a fire, and if somebody blows the fire around, so then he's going to be chayiv, but if the wind helps him, so then it's going to be a grama. So the Gemara says, well, what about Zohar? We see that's a malacha, that Zohar v'rach m'sayaso, that when somebody uses the wind to help him do a malacha, he's chayiv for that. Why should it be different? So the Gemara says, malachas machshaves. So we saw two different ways in the Rishonim how to understand what malachas machshaves is, that either it means that if you, when it comes to Shabbos, because of malachas machshaves, if you carry out your plans that's considered to be a malacha. So it's all based on the fact that your intent was carried out.
The former of malachas machshavas, or others understand it to be, which would have limitations on it,
that no, it's just this malacha specifically is done that way, and we know from the Mishkan this is a malacha. So malachas machshavas means that a malacha that by definition happens that way is considered to be a malacha. So there's a lot to talk about that malacha of Zohar. We talked about some of the halacha ramifications, such as spray cans, that most poskim, not all poskim, but many poskim are makel in the normal aerosol spray cans because they don't involve using the wind from outside. They involve using the compressed air from inside. And that's not considered to be an example of Zohar, and some are machalic between a regular aerosol spray can and a Venturi spray can, which apparently draws in wind from the outside and passes it through with the spray to make that work. That's more of an issue. And some nekudas such as that. Talk about the borer for a few minutes. Borer, sorry? Yes, sir.
Why is Zohar different from
Republican? Why what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says Malachas Machshavas, that's the answer. So we saw, what does that mean, Malachas Machshavas? So the Rishonim have different spins on it. We saw there's a Rush there, and the Migash, and the Rashi. But so basically two ways of understanding it. Either it means that this kind of Machshavto, that you had a plan and this was your intent, and it carried out your intent. So Malachas Machshavas tells you that you're responsible for that. Or to say that it's not about that, but it's about... this is the chiddush of this malacha. This malacha is mentioned in the Torah as a malacha, so therefore, that's the case, even though based on the rules you would think you'd be
bothered. You're just trying to burn the guy's field down there also.
Right, but then, but the chiddush of malachas machshavas might mean that you're chayiv for that.
So the only time malachas machshavas is two shavuos,
not correct, right, 100%. It's only chiddush and shavuos. Now, we didn't talk head-on this year about Malachas Machshavas. We did talk about it 2 years ago. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit next semester. But it's just important to be aware of that we usually, more commonly, talk about Malachas Machshavas like it's a patur. That if you're lacking Malachas Machshavas, you're patur in Hilchos Shabbos in ways you wouldn't otherwise be patur. But there are a few instances, and this seems to be one of them, where it's invoked as a reason to be chayiv, where you would otherwise be patur, but Shabbos you're chayiv because of Malachas Machshavas. Okay, let's talk about Borer for a few minutes. Borer is a very complicated malacha, so just to mention some highlights. So first of all, there is a question which relates, why Borer and Zohar are malachas at all? This is a question that was raised by the Balamor. Balamor says that you would think that these should not be malachas because they should be knocked out of the game from the very beginning because of the issue of malachas in its ritual legufa. Now, again, we didn't talk about that full on, but just to give 2 seconds background to that, that there is a concept of a malacha that's not done for its purpose, it sounds like. So you can translate it into English, which you take in stand. So, malacha shenitzrich l'gufa, we assume a halacha probably that one is pata for that Shabbos, for a malacha that is in this category. It's a machlokas in the Gemara, Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon. But Rabbi Shimon's view, which we probably paskin like, is that one is pater from malacha shenitzrich l'gufa. I say it so tentatively because the truth is the Rambam agrees with Rabbi Huda. The Rambam says you're chayav for malacha shenitzrich l'gufa, and the Shulchan Aruch, we assume he's makel on this, but there's somewhat of a debate about it. It's not 100% clear what the Shulchan Aruch's position is. But what is a malacha shenitzrich l'gufa? So the most famous interpretation is really the minority view in Rishonim, and that's Tosfos, but in Rabbi Chait's picture book, it's the definition, so that also means the next generation is being educated that this is the definition, that a malacha that was done for a reason other than what was done in the Mishkan. So to give an example from something we spoke about today, that you'll say if you're digging a hole, and you want dirt, then that's a malacha shenitzrich l'gufa, because digging as choresh was originally done in the Mishkan so that you could prepare the ground. And here you're not interested in the ground, you're interested in the dirt, so it's a different purpose in the Mishkan, and that's a malacha shenitzrich l'gufa. However, there are those who understand it differently, and it's really the view of most Rishonim. Most Rishonim understand that a malacha that's about something negative rather than something positive is considered to be a malacha shenitzricha legufa. So if you're chasing away bad stuff rather than doing something constructive, so that's malacha shenitzricha legufa. So based on that interpretation, so the Baal HaMor says, certain malachas shouldn't really count, like the malacha of Borer, which is about taking away bad stuff, or Zorer, which is in the same vein. So then these are malacha shenitzrich l'gufa, not just an action that is a malacha shenitzrich l'gufa, but the whole malacha should be subtracted from the list, because the whole malacha itself is negative in nature. So says the Baal HaMor, says, yeah, I'm right. Baal HaMor says that it should not be on the list, but they have protexia, since they were in the Mishkan, so therefore they get on the list, but they're really conceptually a challenge. They really don't fit the model. And others disagree. So the Ramban, for example, the Ramban understands a malacha like this, it should not be viewed as sending away bad stuff. You take the whole picture, you have the good stuff and the bad stuff, and they're both being addressed in this malacha. It comes up also, for example, in the question of, let's say, somebody shaving or cutting hair. Is that a malacha? So you think, yeah, it's a malacha, because in the Mishkan, we know that one of the malachas is gozes. Right? They would shear the wool off of sheep. So that should be a malacha. So you could say, no, but it's a malacha shenitzricha legufa, because in the Mishkan, they did it because they wanted the wool. They were interested in the hair that they were cutting off. When a person gets a haircut or a shave or cuts his fingernails, so he's not interested in the fingernails or in the hair, he's going to throw it out. So he's just interested in getting rid of it. So maybe that should be a malacha shenitzricha legufa. So some would take and say, yes, that's true. But the Ramban would say, look at the whole package. We don't just look at the fingernails, we look at the fingers. We don't just look at the hair, we look at the face. And you're grooming the face, you're grooming the fingernail, you're grooming the fingers, the whole package, so the malacha is happening in that whole playing field. And therefore, that is not considered to be a negative malacha. It's similar, but different from what the Yeshua Yaakov says. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Yeshua Yaakov, who says, let's say we're talking about Borer, that Borer is not about getting rid of the bad, it's about perfecting the food. So if you have food that has bad stuff in it, so then you get rid of the bad stuff, and that makes it perfect, so that's what you've done. That's the positive action that you've done. You've perfected the food. So Mishnah Berurah says, that's all very well and good if you're talking about real ochal and real psolas. If you have food that has real garbage in it, so you got to take the garbage out to make the food edible, so I can understand that. But the problem...
Like a nut or something? Like a pistachio nut?
And that's actually an interesting question, how shells fit into the story. But let's say you have some food that has some real waste matter that's in it, you got to get rid of that. So then you can see, okay, you're perfecting the food. But the problem is that Tosfos and the other Rishonim seem to agree that we also have a concept of subjective psolus. And if you have a mixture where both parts are perfectly fine and edible, but you're only interested in one and you're not interested in the other, so then what you're interested in is called ochal, and what you're not interested in is called psolus. So then the question is, how could you say that you're perfecting anything when it was perfectly fine beforehand, you just didn't like the other half?
Is that like an apple and its peel or something?
So peel, it's like a discussion. Not everyone agrees that a peel is considered to be a taruvis, is considered to be separate. That's a whole discussion about how to deal with peels. But theoretically, if you have a mixture of stuff, you have small items which are mixed in with each other, so then you have a taruvis, and then if you have good and bad, then it should be borer. But what the Rishonim say is, even if it's not good or bad, just you don't like one of the elements, it has to be a different type. So the Trumas Hadeshim and the Poskim following say this doesn't apply if it's all one type of food. Let's say you have candies, and they're all the same candy, but some are big and some are small. So you only want the small candies, so that's not considered to be borer. There's two separate types. So then that's where you have it, and you have a whole discussion what counts as a type and what doesn't count as a type. So...
So like artichoke could be... One type.
Yeah. So there is a... So the Gemara talks about three conditions that would make borer permissible. And presumably, lahalacha, we assume you need all three, even though there was a discussion about individual ones and various rishonim that it might be that one might work by itself, or a specific one might work by itself. But lahalacha, we assume you need three in order for it to work. that borer should be permitted if the following three things are there. That it's ochel mitoch psoles, that you're taking the good from the bad and not the other way around. That you are doing it biyad rather than the kli, using your hand rather than a special borer utensil. And that you're doing it for immediate use and not for later. It's called la'alta. So those three conditions make it mutter. So it's a discussion why exactly those three conditions help and why they should make a difference. So some understand those conditions as a statement that they're not kedara chavori. This is not the way you do bearer. This is considered should be shalo kedara. Now the problem is, if that's the heter, so we find shalo kederach throughout halacha Shabbos. So normally shalo kederach means that something would be an issur derabbanan. We usually don't say that doing something shalo kederach makes something mutter. So why should that be different here? So what we wanted to suggest is that this is different shalo kederach. Normally when you do something shalo kederach, so it doesn't have the full form of the malacha anymore, but it maintains some connection to the malacha. So there's a reason for Chazal to ask it midrabbanan. But maybe what the Gemara is saying here is that these three different conditions attack the malacha from three different directions. So if you're doing it ochel mitoch psoles miyad biyad miyad, so then you are accomplishing three different directions, that it's now not the form of borer for the purpose of borer and the style of borer. So with all those three modifications, you've completely removed any connection to the act of borer. So it's not only mutter min haTorah, it should be mutter completely. Right.
The Havamina, you know, the Gemara is to have those heterim individually.
That's what it sounds like. Well, although it's not clear, the Gemara is very vague because the Gemara has this price, so which doesn't make sense on its own. Right, so you're right, each one is read by itself. It's true, and there are sometimes reasons to say that each one by itself. So there are Rishonim who entertain such a theory.
The halacha is to it.
Right, so the halacha and the ochel mitoch psoles may depend also on how much, that if you say it's kederach habarim, so then it may depend what's there more of. Is there more ochel or is there more psoles? So then what's kederach might change. There is another approach that it's not about kederach, but it's about, or it's not about not being kederach, it's about what it is kederach, that this is kederach achila, that if you have those types of conditions in play, this is the way people normally eat, and eating is mutter on Shabbos, and we can't say that the very act of eating is a malacha, so if the very act of eating by its nature involves some degree of brera, it's not going to be asur. So then this is the direction that one could have brera derech achila, and you're not going to therefore have a malacha. And different Rishonim have different formulations of that thing. So like Rabbeinu Chananya, we look at the Ramban, different formulations of that idea. So if there is such a heter, so then there is a discussion that maybe this should apply to other malachas as well. So for example, that's a discussion you find in the Rashba and the Rush, that maybe there should be a heter for tochein. Then when it comes to tochein, and this was very controversial, as Machlokas HaRishonim, about whether or not this heter exists. But some of the Rishonim say that there's also a heter of la'alter by tochein. Just like you find it by borer, you find it by tochein as well. That something which is so food eating related and for the immediate usage of eating is also going to be mutter in that context. And the Shulta Gibarim argued on that. He thought there was no such heter, and that first of all, he said the heter is only a borer heter. It's not a general malacha heter. And he says if there was such a heter, the Gemara should talk about it. So how could it be that it doesn't? But we probably assume that there is such a heter. We probably assume halacha that there is a heter of tocho and tocho la'alter, sometimes throw in a few other conditions. But it seems like that view probably had a big impact. And then there's a whole discussion to be had about if you say there's a heter of derech achila, so first of all, does it extend to other malachas like tochein? And second of all, does it extend to all malachas or just certain malachas which are integral to the achila process have such a heter? But another malacha which might be relevant, like let's say kosev or mochek, for example, might end up being a part of achila, but is not really fundamental to achila, may or may not be subject to such a heter. We also mentioned a creative view that Rav Yosef Engel had, that Rav Yosef Engel suggested in his Sefer Beis HaOtzer, that the idea of the heter la'alter, is that borer means that you're leaving good and bad separated from each other. But you have a mixture of good and bad, and you're separating them into good and bad. But if you're going to eat the thing right away, so then you don't have good and bad left, you just have the bad left. So you don't have two elements broken up. So based on that, he said that was the basis for the Heter. So that's interesting. But also it means, again, that the whole idea is only by achila. So that's very possibly the case. But many posts nowadays assume that you have a concept of borer by kalim, by clothes, by books, by other things, even though it's hard to see that in the Gemara. The Gemara really only has it by achila. And the Taz sounds like he maintains that. The Arsamech and a few contemporary posts as well did argue that at least as a sniff, you know, at least as a factor to be aware that it's a strong possibility. There is no such concept as borer outside of achila. There's a lot of arguments you made for that, but nonetheless, many contemporary postmen did at least factor in lachumra the possibility that you have borer by other things as well. Hi.
What about the small? I say small because it was a small part in the bear he did, but the head there with the fly that falls into your wine, picking out.
Right. So that's also true. So that's also important to emphasize. We said the opposite before, that even though we assume against the Yerushalmi that you're still in violation of borer if you don't take out all the bad. But the opposite direction, if you take out all the bad, but you take out some of the good, so then that does seem to be a hetter for borer. So that's what is also recommended in discussion in the Taz and some of the latest farm. It's a little bit complicated, but that if you have like a fly in your drink and you're still interested in eating the rest of the drink, which is debatable, but if you decide you still want to drink the rest of it, so you remove the fly together with some liquid around it, so you're taking out the good with the bad also, that should also help. All right, we've entered our last 5 minutes. This is the lightning round. So if you have a question you want to raise now, certainly feel free to contact me anytime in the next 24 hours in terms of any specific questions or after the test as well. You should not stress too much about the Bechina. The Bechina is not the be-all and end-all of everything. It's there to just help to guide the learning process. But if anybody, in these last few minutes, any point anybody wants to discuss,
Hanukkah related, Shabbos related, Yantif related. We talked about Tekiah Shofar, we talked about things like that. Everybody, yeah.
Well, just in terms of all the opinions, what are you, on the test, what are you looking for?